Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. This show is brought to you by our patrons at patreon.com/ElderScrollsLoreCast.
Robots Radio presents...
Welcome to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, a place where the Elder Scrolls community can come together to discuss the boundaries of our knowledge about the universe of the Elder Scrolls. It is Thursday night. It is 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, and I am here again. I am your host, Robots, with my co-host, Lotus of Doom. How's it going,
Hello,
Lotus?
Welcome. Things are well.
Good. Welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. It is the creepy month of October. The weather's getting cooler. The nights are getting longer. The Halloween decorations are coming out. I've been watching a bunch of people bake Halloween things on TV shows for contests and things. I don't know about you, but that's a thing that my wife and I watch. It is the season of the creepy. And last year during this time, I did things like vampires and werewolves, and I got into all that stuff. And this time, Lotus and I were talking, and I want to paint a picture, Lotus. I want to paint a picture for you and our listeners at the very beginning of this episode. And this is something I've done for a long time with this show and some of the other shows that I do. I want to put you in the place of the people in the situation here before I get into any more details. So I want you to imagine that you are in an early culture, kind of an old mannish culture, not very technologically advanced. You've just left the frosted north, the very cold, dangerous homeland you came from of Admora. And you've settled on the shores of a new continent. And this new continent has new creatures on it, beast races, elven races, other creatures, things that you have never experienced before. But with you comes your culture, your worship of ancestors, your worship of creatures and beasts, and especially dragons. And the dragons have come over with you as well. Now, I want you to imagine being in this culture where dragons are real, and this isn't something we have to worry about in the real world at all. The closest thing that we can actually relate this to in actual human terms is, say, you know, when people were hunting woolly mammoths, or the first time they were out on a boat fishing and they saw a great blue whale or something like that, right? That's about the closest we can get to coming across something like a dragon in real life.
Yeah.
Or maybe giant crocodiles in the Nile.
I was about to say, or a crocodile, right? Or something like that.
Something like that. That's about
down in the bayou.
Giant snakes in the Amazon. That's about as close as we get to dragons. But dragons in the Elder Scrolls are intelligent, they're dangerous, and they are, for the majority of them, are actually fairly evil. They're malicious. Now, imagine that you're part of a culture of people who are moving to this new land. You're looking for safety. And dragons are a very real danger. And there is somebody in your tribe who is a priest who has said, listen, I have studied the magics. I've studied the language of the dragons. I can help us to make peace with them if you follow my instructions. Would you even have the choice not to go along with that? What do you think?
I mean, it's one of those faux choices, for lack of a better way of putting it, where it's like, okay, you have the choice to follow us and, you know, go along with this imposing threat or menacing presence, which is great for your safety if you're on that side. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, if you were to not go along with this in this choice, quote unquote, they would then become your adversary, which is, I mean,
insurmountable.
Example, you're a settler. Yeah, if you're a settler or someone new to the land, I mean, what are you going to do against a dragon, possibly already with followers who have pledged allegiance to said dragon or said cult with dragon? It's the choice isn't really there so much as it's just giving you the option to go along.
Right. It's almost like the mafia offering you protection, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't really say no, because if you say no, they will destroy you. So you say yes, and you try to get along as best you can and give them the money that they asked for and hope that they don't keep raising the price on you, right? It's kind of one of those things where you just kind of have to do it in order to survive. So yeah, this is the situation that we are in the Mirithic era, the early first era with the Nidic cultures that eventually became the Nords and settled in the Skyrim area. And that's where we're at the beginning of this story. So that's kind of the mindset I want to put you in. It's very easy to look back on this perspective from, for example, like the Dragon Cult and the Dragon Priests are a big part of Skyrim. They're a big part of Elder Scrolls, that specific Elder Scrolls game. And it's very easy to look at that and go, okay, these are bad guys, or these Draugr are dangerous, or whatever is associated with this. The dragon masks, the dragon, you know, the dragons themselves. This is all bad. I'm the Dovahkiin. I'm going to kill them all. You know, it's very easy to separate yourself from that. But when you actually consider that this was part of the culture and these are just people who were just trying to survive and do what they needed to do, it really sets it in a different kind of a different term. So that's where I want to start with us. And then I want you to think about that as we move into the first section of our lore.
This is where you get off. Come with me.
So, Lotus, what is your recollection from your experience of Skyrim and Elder Scrolls Online of dragon priests? What is your experience? Like, what is your relationship to these things?
I love the design of the dragon priest masks. I remember when you first encounter the dragon priests and they bust out of their coffin, so to speak, and just... I forget which one it was that you first meet in front of the word wall, and mm-hmm. it just bursts through and he's kind of just hovering, and it's such a cool enemy, and it's like the leader of this Draugr crypt, and they seemed really menacing. And then after you defeat your first one, you get to actually take the mask and you notice that it's named individually.
Yeah, after the priest themselves, yeah.
Yes, which that was the first thing I remember was such a cool concept. I was like, oh man, I wonder how many of these there really are. And then there's the lengthy situation of trying to collect all of the dragon priest mats and then place them on the wall in Labyrinthian, which is in and of itself not a quest that many can complete because it is very elaborate. But it has a pretty decent payout as well. And I'm a big fan of at least the concept of them, even though mm-hmm. for being dragon priests and largely revered, their whole existence is basically just one of previous, almost like fake power that ended up just becoming permanent indentured servitude.
Right. Yeah. It's another one of those really unfortunate situations that we find in the Elder Scrolls games where people are just like taken advantage of and terrible things happen to them. And then and even in undeath, they are still paying for the things that they couldn't have helped anyway.
Right. And I mean, they're the highest of the low tier in that situation where the Draugr are cleaning their crypt and maintaining the dragon priest. So
right.
There's people even lower on the totem than they are.
Yeah, very, very true. So let's dig into the dragon priests. I've pulled up some of the background and some of the information, mostly using the UESP and then referencing some of the sources throughout there and then some of the original sources. So dragon priests were originally members of the Dragon Cult. This is a cult that came over from Atmora with the early Nids, and have retained much of their power through the eternal worship of their Draugr servants. They ruled over countless armies of men in their gods' names. They are now found residing in coffins throughout areas of prominent dragon worship. If their sleep is disturbed, the dragon priest will burst out of his coffin, like you described, with considerable force and prepare to destroy whomsoever intruded. I love the use of whomsoever.
Perfect.
Upon their resting place. The highest ranking priests of the dragon cult were granted magical masks that defy the laws of time and possess powerful enchantments. The individual masks are made of varying animals, and each bears the same name as the priest that possessed it. Now, in order to really understand who these dragon priests are, we have to understand what the cult is. A dragon priest is simply the head, the leader of a group of worshipers, a designated region of people who are part of the dragon cult. And they're kind of the most important person, who is also the most powerful individual among this cult, but also kind of the one who is the person who stands between the humans or the men and the mannish people and the dragons, the one who can communicate and negotiate on their behalf, and also then communicates back to the tribe or whoever is part of that cult what the dragons actually want them to do, if they're rallying armies and those kinds of things. So the dragon cult began as a sect within the traditions of animal worship brought by Admorans to Tamriel. Certain scholars believe there were totem animals for the modern divines, in which case worship of the dragon corresponded to the worship of Akatosh. And I find this interesting because we find this in some of the other cultures, that there's this very early awareness among the needs of these divines and how who we would call the eight were active in the world, but their worship of the divines came through in the use of totem animals that represented those divines. Mm-hmm. And one such of them would have been dragons for Akatosh, which makes sense. It goes on and says, dragons were revered more than any other, and they were comfortable in assuring positions as god kings over men. Their servants, the dragon priests, kept the peace between the dragons and men, and their power was so great that uttering any word for dragon was forbidden to all mankind except them. It's kind of like the holy word. It can only be spoken by the priests.
Yeah. It's almost a very similar hierarchy to some of that you see in the Dark Brotherhood as well, with the speaker, the listener, and then you've got, you know, it's interesting that there's always that one dividing factor from this divine entity to the, I don't know, the plebs or the peons at that point in the ranks, which gives you so much potential for corruption when you have that, like, no, don't worry, I'll tell you what they said.
I'm the one who can read the special tome. I'm the one who can speak to the important guy. You have to go through me. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And in the real world, that has been a problem throughout many different religious groups over many different periods of time, that the consolidation of power through this like funnel through like one person or the leader of a group. This is also very similar, this idea that the dragon priests can only speak the word dragon. It's very similar to, say, like during biblical times, the Hebrews during biblical times, the name of God wouldn't be spoken. And it was only the priest of the temple who could actually speak to God and go into the Holy of Holies on one day throughout the year in order to commune directly with Yahweh, you know, the name of God. So it actually has some connections to real world religions as well.
For sure.
So it goes on and says, they made laws for the society of men and were on par with kings. Grand temples were built to honor the dragons and appease them in life and death, many of which survive as Draugr-infested ruins today. Sometime during or soon after the migrations to Tamriel, the dragon cult began to assert more influence and became much more malevolent. From their capital, Brumjinar, in modern-day Hjalmarch, they ruled Skyrim with an iron fist, effectively enslaving the populace. So this became more and more powerful until eventually the dragons lorded over everybody.
Right.
While that led to the change that was, while what led to this change was lost to historians, it was likely caused by Alduin, the firstborn of Akatosh and leader of the dragons, who had chosen to forsake his role as world eater in favor of conquering Mundus for himself. Now we're getting into some of the storyline of the dragons showing back up in Skyrim and why Alduin is such a danger and all that. Men eventually rebelled in the late Merithic era, leading to the ancient Dragon War. Now, the Dragon War, if you've played Skyrim, you have some understanding of what's going on with the Dragon War. I'll just kind of summarize it real quick. The Dragon Priest in Tamriel became more tyrannical, and the populace eventually rebelled sometime in the Merithic era, leading to the legendary Dragon War. Some dragons turned against their own kind and taught the Nords powerful magic, like Parthenax, that allowed them to turn the tide of the war in their favor. We talked about Parthenax in the last episode and why,
yes, we did.
Why he's such a cool character. Weird. Right.
Right. So, strange how this all ties together.
It all ties together. Yeah. After a long and bloody campaign, the rule of the dragons was ended, and the remaining worms, meaning dragons, fled to remote areas. The dragon cult survived for a time, but was marginalized and eventually died out. The last dragon cult stronghold was found and besieged in the first era, 140. Now, this date is interesting because it is very close to the same time that the Alessian Rebellion happens in Cyrodiil.
Right.
This is very close. So we have kind of the ending of the powerful dragon focused Nordic forces and the finishing of the dragon cult and kind of the rebuilding. And for the first time, the Nordic culture could flourish without the dragons being lording over them. At the same time, we have mannish races in Cyrodiil rebelling against the Aeliads and creating the first empire. So
the time of great turmoil as everybody's overthrowing their overlords.
Yeah, pretty much. It's really kind of interesting how that happens right at kind of the early parts of the first era. And that's, you know, because it is the first era, it's one of those time periods where we actually have recorded history as opposed to the Merithic era where everything's just kind of like, maybe sometime in the late Merithic era, who knows when that was? It could be hundreds or thousands of years different from another time early or late in the Merithic era. Who knows? Yeah. So not long after, worship of animal gods was replaced by the then eight divines in mainstream Nord culture, which makes sense because of the influence of the Alessian Empire and the things that were going on with that. So thoughts on any of this? Like, it seems like they lorded over the Nords or at least the Nidic people who became the Nords for a very long period of time.
Yeah, it definitely, their reign of power seemed pretty brutal. And like all of these, I guess you'd almost call them dictatorships to a degree.
Yeah.
Where it's just, there's this one race that just rules over the others with this just brutal, brutal, just
iron
savage.
Fist.
Iron fist. And in both these cases, it was just so extreme. And it just got to the point where with a little bit of divine intervention, boop, okay, well, that's enough. And even though they have such incredible power, they're toppled by those that they've been just teeing off on for however many years. Very similar in the situation going, you know, much more forward in time with the Dwemer and the Falmer that turned into a war, and, you know, not going down that rabbit hole or anything like that. But like, it seems like a civilization can only be thrown into the mud and kicked repeatedly so many times before eventually it's just like, no, this has to stop. And because this world and this whole IP in general has literal gods and stuff like that, it gets to the point where they can kind of intervene when things are so out of control that it's like, okay, maybe we're going to give you a little nudge of help here, and it'll help you topple your horrific overlords.
Right, right. I've always found it interesting that although Akatosh is seen as a good deity, the dragons, which are associated with him, were malevolent.
Yeah, well, I don't know where I first heard it. So this is not me being creative, if you find this to be creative. but it was referred to once. It might have been on the forums or something that I saw it. But it was hard for, or it was posed as the question of, it was hard for dragons to probably even acknowledge mortals, like the needs and stuff like that, as mattering, because to them it's almost a dragon to a person in Tamriel, a need or whatever, is like a just a slightly smaller equivalent to like if you were to go outside and there were a bunch of ants,
right?
Well,
right,
you're not going to try to, you're going to get the ants to do what you want, or you're just going to squish them if they're getting in your house.
Right. You might even just ignore them. Yeah. You like,
or just don't even acknowledge right, they exist. Right, exactly.
Right. You're not going to think twice about squishing them because the analogy works, right? On a very similar way, a dragon could exist indefinitely. And in fact, it's an even bigger distance between dragons and mortals than it is humans and ants. Like we can live, you know, if you live a really healthy life and you have good genetics, over 100 years. An ant lives for a extremely small fraction of that amount of time, and has a very small fraction of the amount of intellect and understanding and no self-awareness. Seems like a little biological robot, you know, like what's the use of that? The distance between us and dragons is even greater than that. So it would make sense that they would just be like, well, why do you even matter?
That's exactly it. It's like, they don't really seem to view mortals as anything that's even really like, they're so above what they would consider mortals. Is like, well, this isn't comparative at all, so it's irrelevant what we do to you. So if you're, you know, you can perform a purpose and help us in certain ways, but if you're not useful, it's not even like a second thought to just brush them aside. And it's like, okay, you know, it wasn't the same as the aliens where they seem to get pleasure out of torturing them. They more seem just brutally efficient. It's like, all right, we're done with you, squish, dead.
Right. Yeah, the aliens were still, you know, elves. They were still mortals.
They were on the same plane, but they seemed like they, in many cases with the gut gardens and all that weird stuff.
Yeah.
They seemed to get more of a sadistic pleasure out of it, where it seemed almost like dragons cared so little, it was irrelevant what was happening. So it's like, well, if we can't get any use out of this, just smash, squish, whatever.
Right. Yeah. There's also references to the Daedric princes who sometimes act that way towards mortals. You know, a lot of times, a lot of times they, you know, oh, I can use you, or oh, I want to, harvest your souls or whatever. But oftentimes, you know, even, you know, some of the dialogue from like Molek Bal, while he drops the anchors and things, talks about how like, you know, you guys are puny and insignificant. You just don't realize it yet. You know, that kind of language. So there's that levels of power. What's so interesting about these stories, though, is that especially something like the Dragonborn, this idea that, like, imagine a ant who becomes so empowered and heroic that it can, like, oust the humans from its yard, you know?
Yeah. Think of the, we'll just stick with the ridiculous ant analogy that's going to get weird now, but... imagine that ant learns to pick up a kitchen knife. They get enough ants to coordinate and they pick up a kitchen knife and they manage to take you out in your sleep. It's like the odds of that are so out of the realm of possibility. You wouldn't even really think about it, which almost makes me wonder if in the same situation, it might have to some degree caught dragons off guard, that it's like, wait, what is happening? Like, how are you fighting back? You shouldn't even matter at all.
Yeah. Or I mean, think about it from this way, from an intellectual standpoint, how are you speaking our language?
Right. That would, like, be a surprise if an ant started talking to you in English or whatever language is your primary. That'd certainly be interesting, to say the least. Like, the ant is talking. Why is the ant talking? Like, what is going on?
Right. And with the dragon priests, there's some explanation there that, you know, the dragons have taught them speech, and they have some dragon speech in order to communicate with the dragons, that kind of thing. But when it came to, say, like the Dovahkiin and absorbing dragon souls and becoming more and more powerful and learning all of the dragon language, and then and this is the way that the dragons, like, four dragons, and we can get into this stuff, Arimathias talks about this, four dragons, communication was combat. It was like, that was their very nature. So to be able to meet them on that level as a mortal must have been extremely confusing, at least at first, you know, like, who are you, mortal, that you can speak to me in my own language? You know, like,
And then more so if they can outshout them in a certain situation or whatever, it's that's essentially the be all end all for the, you know, that's their debates. Their debates take down mountains when they argue, because it's knocking pieces off things. And it's like, if they manage to then suddenly have mortals shouting at them in the same way that they're used to doing there, that's going to be very jarring to see.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, just living through that kind of situation must have been amazing. It like, this isn't just, and this is the thing that I want people to understand when they play through this again, or they look at dragons in these games, it's not just, you know, the medieval equivalent of like knights on the castle wall and the dragon flies by and burns fire. And so they shoot ballistas at it, you know, like that kind of thing. Like this is a level well above that. This is way bigger than just the big scaly monster wants to destroy the castle, you know?
Yeah.
Like it is significantly more than that. Now let's talk about how the Draugr fit in. Cause I want to kind of finish this whole understanding how the mortals make sense and why the Draugr are a piece of the puzzle, especially with the priests. It says here, in life, many were followers of the dragon priest, though others can be found guarding nobility and treasures. When the priest died, his followers, which became the Draugr, were made undead and buried with him. And this also has connections to the real world, things like the tombs you would find in Egypt or other locations through the Middle East, like this idea of burying your followers with you or your items or your pets or your family, you know, those kinds of things. The followers would rise from their resting places in shifts to worship at the sarcophagus of the priest, transferring their life force to him and to defend their barrow against unwanted intruders. This has another connection to real world stuff. Oftentimes in, say, ancient Egypt, a pharaoh was often buried with things to sustain the pharaoh in the afterlife, food, their favorite objects, because it was thought that those things would go with the pharaoh into the afterlife. This is kind of an even bigger version of that, where the followers themselves are, and it says here, they return to their graves and regenerate their life force while sleeping. So in sleep, they regenerate their life force and then they deliver it back to the priest to continue feeding power to the priest, like batteries. So the very reason that they're even in these tombs is to continue transferring their own life energy into the priest. It finishes up and says, it's speculated that these undead followers would have been indistinguishable from the living when the barrows were new. So they would have, even in undeath, looked like living people going about their daily routines in the barrow. Over time, the followers' bodies withered despite the ancient Nordic embalming techniques, and they became the modern Draugr of Skyrim. This is why they look more like zombies. Mm-hmm. The local Nords mistakenly believed that the Draugr were cursed with undeath for serving the dragons, but they weren't. And this shows a disconnect between the stories over time changing and the way that the more recent Nordic cultures view the old cultures. It wasn't that they were killed and cursed with undeath. This was right. Actually something they signed up for as for being followers. They probably knew that this would be their eternity. And it was probably spoken of beautifully. Like, you will have a home here with your dragon priest lord and be serving him through all eternity.
Right. It's definitely, I assume, spun in a way that made it sound glamorous and not just your undead janitors and, you know, you need to moisten his sarcophagus so that he doesn't dry out. God. Like, that's not really a moisten selling his point.
Oh, excuse me. Can I get some? My coffin's a little bit dry. Reggie? Yeah,
and
Vanessa?
And, you know.
Moisten my coffin.
Through any of these games, to be fair, they're very bad housekeepers as well, because I mean, there's broken pots everywhere, there's spider webs all over the place. It's like,
oh yeah,
they just shamble about and just, you know, do the bare minimum, light torches, because how else would all these Draugr crypts be so well lit?
You know, what would be really awesome is if one of the dragon priests was like really nitpicky about like things being in the right place and cleaned, and you went into that tomb and everything was like shiny and still new and polished and no cobwebs, everything's all shiny,
everything's beautiful,
right? And you come in and the Draugr don't even pay attention to you because they're so focused on keeping things clean that they don't remember to guard the crypt. And so they're like they're like cleaning the walls and, like, you know, sweeping the floor. That would be awesome.
Yep, there's just the one tomb that's very, very, very meticulous, and all the rest are a dumpster.
Right, and just shiny, like bright torches, like everything, all the gold, all the copper, all the metals are all shiny and new looking.
Yep, yeah. Neatly stacked and not neatly just stacked. Broken vases everywhere.
Yeah, books on shelves, you know, like actual, organized. You know, like maybe old looking furniture, but still like in good repair. You know,
just
like
freshly painted.
Freshly painted. Yeah, that would be amazing. Just the one dragon priest was just like a stickler. He was just like, no, you'll keep my tomb perfectly spotlessly clean. Yes.
Yep.
That would be amazing. So, all right. Well, we're going to get to, in the second half of the episode, the history of Zahn the Scale Caller, which actually comes from ESO. It's a biography that shows up in the books in ESO. And I wanted to read through this because it's kind of interesting. It's kind of an interesting perspective on a dragon priest specifically. But before we do that, let's transition to the middle of the show.
The skies are marked with numberless sparks, each a fire, and every one a sign.
My name is Brian Burton. It's been 26 years since the bombs fell. And since I've left the vault, I've been trying to rebuild. But this isn't the Appalachia that I remember. There's so much more to everything going on. Promise to find the answer. So if you're out there, if you're listening, just hone in on these coordinates. Remember, there's a place for you at the end. Omega.
The Omega Broadcast Fallout Story is available on iTunes, Spotify, and many great podcasting sources.
All right, we're in the middle of the show. It smells very middly in here. And this week, I have to thank our patrons, our new patrons who signed up in September. So thank you to Ali W. Kung Fu Kangaroo, who's in chat with us live right now. I saw your name pop up earlier. We might still be here. And Herbert S. Thank you for signing up on Patreon to support the show. We really appreciate your support. And if you are interested in helping to support the show to get ad-free episodes, episodes early, a day early, and a whole bunch of other things, including even our tier 4 patrons who get to join us at the end of every month to talk about all sorts of fun stuff, then check out patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast for that. Also, this week, I have to read out some of the new reviews we got over the last month, and I'm going to try and get through this quick, but you guys are full, you're very verbose. There are lots of words here, so I'm going to do my best to just knock this out as fast as I can. Rugoth Shugoth from the United States said, great lore fix, 5 stars. This podcast quenches my thirst for the web of lore that is TES. Tom does a great job of breaking it down into bite-sized and easy to understand meaty mouthfuls. Been playing since Oblivion, and I still am learning new things each episode. Keep up the good work, Tom. Well, thank you, Rugoth Shugoth. We also have Droses from the United States who writes, the perfect intro to the Elder Scrolls universe, 5 stars. I've been a longtime fan of Elder Scrolls, but never got all too deep into the lore before now. The Elder Scrolls Lorecast is a phenomenal gateway into the rich world of lore. Yes, that's it. Good old Redwater. Lore. Tom is a fantastic host who makes a dense, conflict-ridden, dragon-breaking timeline easily accessible and enjoyable. I've been playing both Oblivion and Skyrim alongside listening to this podcast, and it has been a glorious experience. That's awesome. I love when people listen to podcasts and play games at the same time. Now motivated to read the books, I am able to read deeper thanks to Tom's insights that go beyond the writing. I blew through everything in a week and a half. Holy crap. We are almost 100 episodes into the show. We are three episodes away. This is episode 98, I believe. So, yeah. Holy crap.
Yeah, that's a lot of content to blow through. Like, I listen to a lot of podcasts. that is a lot.
That's amazing. So in a week and a half, and we'll continue to go back through older episodes for refreshers, a must listen if you are an Elder Scrolls fan. Well, thank you, Droses. I really appreciate that. I hope you join us here live sometime for our new episode so you can hang out with us and chat and send us funny messages and whatever in chat while we're doing this. And then we have one more from Grand His Gandhi's Gonads. I think this is Gandhi's. It looks like, yes, Gandhi's Gonads. Very, very nice name. Also Beelzebub, who is also in chat, who writes, Professor Robot's tutelage. Under the tutelage of Professor Robots, I like that. We love for the my love for the Elder Scrolls lore and games has flourished into something greater than ever I could have dreamed. Thank you so much for adding color to the gray maybe. That's a good one. For helping in steeping up my role playing, I deliver pizzas, and you have been like a teacher and a guide through Tamriel. I have earned my introductory degree. When I finish this podcast on, I felt as the outro music played that I was walking the stage of knowledge. Now I wait for my next installment. I will continue my apprenticeship soon with you. Amazing content, great attention to detail, and laid out in a clear, concise, easy to understand way. Thank you for all you do. Beelzebub 88. Well, thank you, Beelzebub. I appreciate that. That's awesome. So if you are interested in helping support the show, leaving a rating or review on whatever podcatcher would be amazing. It helps a ton. It lets people know that we are still actively creating episodes and what to expect. And it really, really does help. Next to that, recommending to a friend is probably the absolute best thing you could possibly do. But if you do leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, or at least a review with words, and it's 5 stars, I will be reading it out on a future episode at the end of our middle of next month. And so that's a wonderful thing you can do. Also, if you'd like to support the show in other ways, you can do it by, you know, buying things from our sponsors on the Robots Radio Network. In fact, audiobooks.com has a deal where you don't have to buy anything and you get 3 books for free, which is amazing. And Lotus and I talked about this on a previous episode. You can get the Elder Scrolls books on audiobooks.com and listen to them, and they're great. Yep. They're really, really
strongly
good.
Strongly recommend them, especially if you're already a fan of the series. They're great supplementary material to go along with it. Mm-hmm. So it's a good story that ties into more than you would expect.
It delves very deeply into events during a specific time period in the history, and some of the characters that you wouldn't have expected to get a more nuanced understanding of, including the Daedric, what are they? The Dromara. So very interesting perspective on that stuff. Also, some really cool characters in it, by the way. You come to really like them.
It actually not humanizes the Dromara, but like you get to see a side of them that's rather peculiar, and you would not usually, because the games kind of have them just as your adversaries most of the time with occasional helping. This actually gives you, or in both of the books, gives you a decent look at their society, which is kind of strange. I wasn't expecting that they actually had such a fleshed out. I mean, it's certainly not normal, but it's strange, to say the least, to see how they go about their daily life as opposed to just like enemy goes here and waits for you to come and kill them, or right. They kill you.
Yeah,
they flesh them out so that they feel like they're an actual living like set of creatures in the world along with us.
Yeah, and then dealing with their own perspective on life and death, because they resurrect, and there's a whole process for that, which is really interestingly explained. So go look up The Infernal City if you're interested in that. It's a quick read, especially when you're listening to it. It's not that bad. Long, but it's really good. And then there's a second book if you want to get the one after that. But start there with Lord of Souls. The Infernal City. These are such good names.
The names are a little
extreme.
A little back to the days of Arena, as opposed to, you know, some of the more...
Well, Oblivion. That sounds pretty intense.
Yeah.
Skyrim is like Skyrim.
Skyrim, Morrowind. Yeah, I like when they're named after areas. Although Daggerfall in and of itself, you know, whatever. We don't need to get into naming lore.
All right. Well, check it out. That's in the show notes. All you have to do is click the link and just sign up. You'll get 3 free books, 2 VIP books, and it helps support the show. Plus, there's some other deals. Look through the different stuff in the show notes. There might be some other stuff you're interested in. All right. Let's move on to the second half of the show.
Yes, yes, you're entirely brilliant. Conquering madness and all that. Blah, 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 blah.
So, Lotus, when we were talking through this a little bit before the show, you mentioned that you wanted to talk about Zahn the Scale Caller.
This is definitely something I felt was kind of interesting, because it's one of the few Dragon Priests that you deal with pretty extensively on her story, which is also unique, as in Skyrim, all the dragon priests are male. And Zahn proves that that is not like a requirement or anything necessarily intentional, as she is not male, so that you can have dragon priests of either sex.
Yeah, so there's a book from Elder Scrolls Online called The History of Zahn the Scalecaller by Jorvold Davax, Dragon Priest Historian. I'm sure yes. Jorvold is a Nord. That sounds like a Nord name, right?
Indeed. It's if you actually want to find this book in game, right at the start of entering the dungeon Scalecaller Peak that came with the Dragonbones DLC in Elder Scrolls Online, it should be on like a, it's really like when you enter the dungeon, it's in front of you. You can grab it and it's either in your eidetic memory or you can just read it right on the spot.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not very long. I wanted to read through it on this episode because it's interesting. It gives us a, this is one of the reasons I really like Elder Scrolls Online is because there's a lot of opportunity for the lore writers to dig a little bit deeper into some of the different topics from across the entire series as we visit places like Scalecaller Peak and places like that.
Right.
So here, we'll just dig into it. Zahn the Scalecaller was a dragon priest of short life and little renown. She commanded no great battles, conquered no powerful armies. At just a glance, one would think her unremarkable, unworthy of further inspection. Certainly, that has been the viewpoint of historians up to this point, given the lack of academia written on her. However, the fact that Zahn's story has been so ignored is exactly what makes her such a fascinating subject. Zahn was uncommonly young when chosen by her dragon lord, the mighty Dova Thervokun. Thervokun. Yeah.
This is a dragon. They say it a lot in game, but I mean, the names are.
Yeah. Yeah. It is said that her connection to Thervokun was particularly strong. As we know, there is much speculation on the connection between a dragon and their chosen priest, whether it be spiritual, magical, or perhaps merely political. Whatever the case, Zahn grew a rapid and robust attachment, which her followers took as a sign of great fortune for a decade or so. All was well. Now, let's pause here. Let's go back to our analogy about like men and and ants. This is like the human walking it like up to the ant's nest and surveying all of the ants and going, you will be my chosen one.
You are the best ant.
You are the best ant for whatever reason. Right. So this Dova, this dragon picks out Zahn from the group and says, you young lady, you are my chosen one. You're like, okay. All right.
Yep. That's good. Good. Good enough.
yes, sir. It goes on and says, the turmoil began when Thervokun left his temple for reasons unknown to all but perhaps Zahn herself. By all accounts, it was this departure that led to the dragon priest's steady decline into a depressive state. Though it is uncertain whether this was magically or psychologically induced, this depression brought about frequent seclusion, growing into a steady isolation. Her followers slowly grew discontent, and as time went by, many became mistrustful. They believed that Thervokun had abandoned them and saw this with despair, that we today would call the loss of the divines. So like losing your connection to your faith, basically. They began to accuse Scalecaller of driving him away with her weakness. When confronted with these accusations, it is said that Scalecaller made no protest. Her followers took this as admittance and killed her in their anger. This leads us to Zahn's greatest mystery. When accused by her followers, why did she not defend herself? My theory, though mostly speculative, is that the dragon priest simply was not able. The loss of her dragon lord had brought upon such misery that she had lost her will and perhaps even her ability to speak. Again, whether this was brought upon by magical means or mere psychological trauma, I am still unaware. I believe through studying this historical occurrence, we may gain further insight into the link between dragon priests and their dragon lords. We must look past the rudimentary political aspects of such a relationship to see what lies beyond. What precisely was the spiritual connection so highly revered? With Scale Caller's help, we can begin to answer that question. So there's more going on here than just like, you're my chosen one, you're going to do my thing. There is a very personal connection between these dragon priests and their dragons.
Yes. And in the story, because the reference I made to it being part of the Dragon Bones, there is another dungeon called Fang Lair, in which the dragon Thervacoon is actually resurrected by a necromancer. He would be the end boss. Well, not in his full form, in a bone form. He's a bone dragon. Yeah. He's resurrected there. So they were both brought as two different dungeons to kind of fully tell their parts of the story. There's questions and speculation if you look up on actually Throve where he went and why. But the interesting thing is that when she was slain, she was then resurrected later on. And her connection to the dragon isn't still there when you actually do the dungeon, as she has now devoted her life to Periite to get revenge on, and which is always a good choice.
Always a good choice. He's the best of the Daedra.
great dude.
Yeah.
So she looks to Periite for guidance, and when you fight her, she actually has the shield Spellbreaker and holds that Daedric artifact until you forcibly take it away from her. Because spoiler alert, she doesn't do very well the second time around either. but yeah, it's interesting just the strong tie that she specifically, and I assume all of them, had to their dragon, where they made reference to, was it magical or were they just like super dependent on them? Which I guess if you're given that much power, regardless of what it is, or have that much favor, and then to have it basically just abruptly yanked away in this situation when Thervacan just kind of pieces out,
just ups and leaves.
It's just like, wait, what did I do wrong? Like, things go from great to tragic very quickly.
Take me with you.
Nope, yeah,
I'm heading out.
So that's just it. It's an interesting dynamic they have with each other that in this situation seems very sad if you actually look at it, because when you fight her, a lot of it is, it sounds like she's in mourning when she has her call outs in the fight. Mm-hmm. She's angry at the same time, but a lot of it is, it, she actually sounds depressed. Which she might have gone to Periite for something, but it's like you're just looking for something new to latch onto, possibly, as opposed to actually believing in this other thing, because you're essentially scorned. So,
right. Yeah. And the thing here is that it could be either psychological, like you're saying, some powerful entity, a god to you, basically comes and says, you are my chosen one. Here is a bunch of power. Lord over these people for me.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, great. And then they leave and you go, oh God. Okay, what do I do now?
Now what do I do?
You can feel your power diminish because they've removed themselves or whatever. And so that would cause psychological depression. Or you could see it from a magical standpoint of this magical godlike being uses some sort of enchantment on you in order to make you do its bidding. And then when it leaves, that enchantment breaks. And now you feel lost because it's like a piece of you is gone. It could be, maybe it's a combination of both, you know, but it's interesting because these dragons tied themselves to these people in a very fundamental way that changed the course of history. They didn't just keep going about their way and stepping on them or ignoring them. They really did tie themselves to the people.
Actually go along with that, I reopened up the direct reference I had from another time when I was researching this earlier. There, just to give a couple direct things as opposed to have it be, you know, kind of our interpretations of it. Mm-hmm. To reinforce the kind of like tragic end, I have some of her dialogue bits that she shouts throughout the fight, which kind of reinforce, I guess, would be what we're saying. When you enter into the fight, did Thervokin send you to usurp me, to take this temple back? No matter, this mountaintop shall be your grave, just as it was mine. So she still remembers what happened prior to her death or whatever. But when you start, it's really awkward because one of her quotes is, he left me, he abandoned me, but now I serve another. Once I was worshipped, now I shall be feared. I rule over this mountain and you shall feel my wrath. My lord demands an offering and your corpses shall do nicely. So she's shifting between being like depressed and really angry about it all at the same time.
It's almost like she's upset that power was taken from her.
Yeah,
and she's going, well, I will find any means possible to gain power back. So
I mean, the series gets dark in certain ways, but her dialogue to me sounds almost like she's like a scorned lover of Thorfinn, whether or not that's like actually the case.
Yeah,
it's like she just seems heartbroken and bitter all at the same time, which is just like, it is, it's kind of like a tragic tale, which I guess kind of goes along with the fact that it's like, man, she did not do well throughout her existence and even her, I don't know, her rebirth, so to speak. It still continued to be tragic no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we actually just got a new patron who subbed during the live stream. Devin, thank you for becoming a patron of the show. I don't know if you're watching currently or if this is just a coincidence, but welcome to the Patreon. I hope you enjoy the ad free experience. That's an interesting question. So I want to go to some of the questions, some of the notes in here. I think Crystal points out something interesting. What's the point of being a lich if you're buried in a tomb?
Like, yeah, seriously,
you're gonna enjoy eternal life.
Better to do stuff
in a container that's roughly the size of your body. Yeah,
yeah. I she strikes me as the type who would probably sit alone on her mountaintop writing poetry in the snow, though, with her situation at hand, just being kind of emo and crying with, you know, Perryite floating around. Being gross, giving her head colds while she's up there.
She's sniffling both because she's crying and has a head cold at the same time.
Yeah,
while her tears like stream down the paper that she's writing on and blur the ink.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Like Edgar Allan Poe says, Necromata. Oh man, that's funny stuff. All right. Well, I think that pretty much covers it. I hope you guys. Yeah. I hope this brings a little bit more color and flavor to your understanding of what's going on with the dragons and the relationship to people. Obviously, most of our listeners have played Skyrim, so if you dive back into Skyrim, maybe this will give you a little bit more perspective on some of the interactions you have in that game. But also, like Lotus has gone on, Elder Scrolls Online has a lot of this content as well. There are, even going through some of the places in the different Skyrim zones, you come across Draugr and tombs. Yep. From an era two eras earlier than the things that happen in Skyrim, which is kind of interesting. And the layouts for the tombs are actually very, very similar to the ones in Skyrim. So there's a lot of cool stuff in there. I hope you guys dig into that stuff and, you know, reach out to us. Let us know on either the Twitter account, Elder Scrolls Lorecast, you know, at Elder Scrolls Lorecast, or on the Discord. If you guys want to talk about this stuff, we would love to hear your thoughts on these things and your own perspectives on this. And maybe there's a piece of this that we didn't cover that would be really cool to cover that you have some insight on. We'd love to hear that as well.
Given a choice, I was going to say, like, would you take this type of power for the potential of also having these huge drawbacks come, you know, later on down the line? It seemed like while they were in charge, they had things going pretty well for them. But it's like,
yeah,
what once that power left, it was like, oof, that is a rough life to live. Well, rough afterlife to live without that type of power.
Yeah, it seems like pretty much every bad path leads you to some sort of bad afterlife. Mm-hmm. You know, you worship the wrong Daedric prince or dragon or whatever, and you end up just kind of dooming yourself to something.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. But yet we all still love this world and we want to live there. And yet it's absolutely terrible. And we probably would have been one of the nameless masses who had some terrible thing happen to us.
Yeah. Most of us would have been taken out by the Nahaten flu anyways. So,
That's true.
Yeah. As much as I love this world, I'm very glad this is not a world I live in, because there's kind of two ends to stories in the Elder Scrolls. There's the sad endings and the endings that look happy until they become sad, and that's really all you get.
right. Maybe that's why I like the Elder Scrolls so much, is there's something beautiful about sadness. It's almost a Tolkien-esque kind of thing.
Yep.
This idea of like beauty and sadness, or still moving forward even in the face of hopeless odds, you know, that kind of thing. Something very poetic, or I don't know, pretty beautiful.
No, for sure.
I don't know. I can't find a good way to explain it, but there's something appealing about that, even in its terribleness. So, all right, well, let's wrap this up. Lotus, you have anything cool going on that you want to talk about? I know you've got some fun stuff coming up. You got a fun weekend.
Yeah, next weekend, starting October 16th at 6 p.m., Hyper Pixie is kicking off our Tales of Tamriel 48-hour charity marathon for Extra Life. So, that starts October 16th at 6 p.m., like I said, and it goes until October 18th, which is that Sunday at 6 p.m. We will be shifting amongst the hosts and just keeping the marathon running one way or another on one of our channels. And it'll be hosted. So if you go to my channel over at Lotus of Doom on Twitch, I'll be hosting whoever is live, even if it is not me. And we have lots of stuff. Even if you can't donate financially, just helping out by spreading the word, much like Tom had mentioned with the show, sometimes you just, you know, letting other people know opens more doors than you would expect.
It is absolutely the best thing you could do for any content creator. Any content creator, like, we could spend thousands of dollars on advertising this show on like social media and get like 10 or 20 new listeners. If every single one of you just went to one friend who you know enjoys these games and just says, "Hey, I've really been enjoying this podcast," or "Hey, I've really been enjoying, you know, Lotus's streams," or whatever it is we're doing, our listenership would increase by like 30-50%. Like, it really is amazing. So if you know anybody, just please, just, you know, Leave a kind word with them. Nudge them on the shoulder and say, "Hey, let me show you this podcast."
Yeah, you'd be surprised how much it does. Just to show it to different people. If it's not their thing, that's fine. But it's like a lot of times people just don't know something's there to check it out. And on the other side of things, thanks to Gina Bruno, who is the community manager for ZeniMax Online Studios, who makes the Elder Scrolls Online, we will be doing a lot of everything. Will generally be Elder Scrolls based for the most part, but a lot of it will also be ESO. We were given codes to give away as promotional stuff for the event to encourage people to swing in. We've got copies of the game itself to give away. We have crown crates to give away.
That's awesome.
We have torch bugs, those little pets that everybody loves.
Everybody loves the torch bugs.
I know. So glow butts, we have codes butts for those. And then the other things that we do have, which I was given in person, and I know you've got a couple of these yourself.
Yeah, you sent me one.
Relatively rare, but we also have, for anybody interested and happens to be watching this, we have physical versions of the coins from in-game that are proportionate to the zones. We have Elsewhere ones and Greymore ones. And I don't personally like to strong arm people. You know, life is hard, so having everything be about money can be tricky, even when it is for charity. I understand.
Yeah.
So for hanging out with us and making the marathon easier, because it is made easier when we have you to hang out with, we like to just kind of raffle them away.
Keep them awake.
Help us stay awake is also something very useful.
Type something funny in chat every 5 minutes or so. It helps a ton.
So when we hit like any type of landmarks or do something super impressive, or we're just delirious because we're so tired, I was gonna say, we have those to give away as well. All of this stuff is just kind of to encourage people to come by, hang out, and hopefully raise some money for a good cause. We're off to a great start for us not actually having started yet. We're almost at $400, plus we donated $200 from my personal channel from earlier in the year, from my first payout. $200 went to Extra Life United, which was the event Extra Life Official ran earlier in the year. So same cause, different hospital, but I figured we could help out the cause there. So that was from my channel. So theoretically, if you wanted to look at it in all encompassing, we're over $500 raised just this year alone, and we haven't even started the marathon yet. So
that's awesome. That's great.
Thank you, everybody who's already helped.
Yeah. Show up this weekend, hang out, watch some Elder Scrolls. Yep. Fun stuff. Yeah, well, awesome. I've got my stuff going on. You can check out all my shows at robotsradio.net. Also, if you are watching us on the live stream, everything that I earn from streaming, so whether that's bits or donations or subs or even your Amazon, you know, Prime subscriptions or whatever, all of that money until the election is going to a charity. Speaking of charities, represent.us to fight corruption in the government so that we can make sure that the things that the people actually want get done rather than the things that corrupt people want get done. Let's, you know, wouldn't it be novel
it's weird. We need a charity to make our democracy be democratic.
Right. Yeah. It has been shown that it doesn't matter how much support the public has for or against anything, that the politicians are going to do what they want regardless. And that is absolutely not the way it should work. The people are the ones who should, if the majority of the people want something to happen, then that should be the things that our representatives make sure happened, right? That's the way a representative government works, and that's what we need again. And so everything that I've been doing this for like the last 2 months now, if you would like to help support that as well, then anything you donate to the stream or even your subs will be going to that until the election. So thank you for being here and for subbing. And if you missed the live stream and you want to check it out, it will be up on the Robots Radio YouTube. You can come check that out. And I'll be on our Twitch account playing games and stuff on the regular nights that I do that as well. So come by and see us sometime. All right, Lotus, I think that's it for the episode.
Seems good.
I think we're done. Guys, thanks for being here. Until next time, make sure that you, if you do worship a dragon, then I don't know, stay on its good side. Maybe try not to get it from running away from you so that all your power disappears. I don't know how that works.
Keep your Draugr on point to keep your tombs clean.
Yes. Yeah. If you are managing a Draugr tomb, then yeah, give them some brooms and some dustpans and stuff. It'll do wonders. All right, guys. We'll talk to you next week. See you later.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. All sounds and music are owned by Bethesda Softworks or ZeniMax Studios, and no copyright infringement is intended. If you have something you'd like to contribute to the show, please reach out to us at elderscrollslorecast@gmail.com or on Twitter at @ESOLorecast. If you'd like to help support the show, check out the rewards you can get at patreon.com/elderscrollslorecast. I really appreciate you listening, and I'd love to hear from you soon. And thanks to our patrons for support, especially our Tier 5 patrons, including Noodle Al Dente.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
Are you an avid player of The Elder Scrolls Online and looking to take your game to that next level? Well, the Red Diamond Courier podcast is here to help. I'm Bob Chachinski.
And I'm DogBark24.
We are two experienced players aiming to help others learn and improve through in-game knowledge and references.
From PvE
to PvP
and everything in between.
There's sure to be something for you in the Red Diamond Courier.
We hope you check us out. Thanks.
Have you ever wondered how deep the Elder Scrolls lore rabbit hole goes? Have you got a grasp of the basics and want to find out more about the universe? Written in Uncertainty is here to help you. We'll be mixing in philosophy, theology, and whatever other theory is useful with Elder Scrolls texts to untangle some of the biggest questions in the series, like what are Dragonbreaks, how does Chim work, where did the Dwemer go, and more. Check us out at writteninuncertainty.com or find Written in Uncertainty on any podcatcher. Thanks for listening, and catch you later in the grey maybe of Tamriel.